It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Scotty Johnny Barnett, and with me, as per usual, is Aaron Cheddar Talk Flottam. How are you, Aaron?
John, I am doing well. Welcome to the sports abyss, my friend.
Absolutely. And you have said this before, and we were not fully there before, but we are absolutely 100% in it now. We're going to come at you and give you probably a very... very much a shortened version of what we normally would give you because there's just not as much to cover this week. But before we get started, I remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at jbarn54. You can follow the show on Twitter at scottyjohnny1. That's the number one. And Aaron, if people were to ever follow you on Twitter somehow, how would they do this?
I'm up 40 followers this week. I said some mean stuff about Chicago. You can find me at Cheddar Talk, John, at Cheddar Talk. And yeah, no, the product of this, the sports abyss coming so late. I mean, the Bucks were a big, big, big part of it, obviously, keeping us busy later on. But, you know, and the Packers changing coaches gave us a lot to talk about with the Packers in the offseason beyond the draft. So, I mean, any other year, I mean, the Bucks being done in February and, the Packers, just another ho-hum offseason. Between all the free agents, the draft, and the new coaches, I mean, that's the reason why it took so long to get to the abyss this year. But here we are.
Yes, we are. And we'll just briefly mention as well, though, you can follow the show. You can go to our website. We put up all of our shows on the website. It's scottyjohnny.com. It's really easy to find. scottyjohnny.com. If you can't spell .com, then we don't want you following us. Anyhow,
crawl out of your cave.
We're going to get going right away here, and we'll start off with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Aaron, really, there are only one team. There is only one team left making any sort of games. But again, this is the state of Wisconsin that we're talking about. So we're going to start off with the most important stuff. There was a major injury in Packers camp this last week, and it comes all the way at the top. And of course, I mean that Matt LaFleur has torn his Achilles. This is a big deal, obviously.
The injury that I fear more than anything else. Ugh.
I love people saying things like, well, if anybody was going to tear his Achilles, I'm glad it's the head coach. As if that were the option. Like, somebody's going to have it. Who are you picking? But
and as I stated, too, very, very straightforwardly, Mike McCarthy would have never have done this. Mike McCarthy doesn't work out.
No. I'm trying to think what he could have torn. He could have... I don't know. He didn't do as much. This is the one thing, though, that I will say is with Matt LaFleur is he's very much more hands-on. There's been so much stuff about how he's very involved in terms of even correcting, like, where do you need to have your hands for handoff? You know, correcting running backs on their steps, getting their hands right for handoffs. Getting their hand placement places, getting footwork down for some of the quarterback stuff and all that. He's a very hands-on guy. He's very much involved in showing and walking them through the process. So, I mean, this is going to slow things down a little bit for him and for this offense. But they're in mini camps. They're in summer mini camps. It doesn't matter that much. It's an OTA. We don't even have everybody there. But the big thing is, like, it matters a little bit because it affects the way that he likes to coach. And that's a problem because we'd like him to continue coaching the way he does because I like the way he's very hands-on with all the players.
Right. And now he's going to be sitting on a golf cart, and I don't know the whole recovery process, but you're not really allowed to be up on your feet too much when you've torn your Achilles either. So
he has been up and in a boot, so he's got the walking boot a little bit. He did wear it to the charity softball event, which is a long-standing Green Bay Packer tradition. It's a charity softball game with all the players, offense versus defense. Traditionally, it's been Donald Drivers in days gone by, but obviously when he left, he passed it off to Jordy Nelson, and now, you know, it's still being run. I think Devontae Adams is running it up. The offense won this year in the game, and Matt LaFleur threw out the ceremonial first pitch. I don't know how ceremonial it can be for what is a once-a-year game, but whatever. every pitch is a little ceremonial when you only do it once a year.
Yes, yes.
And no broken noses this year. As you recall, Clay Matthews ceremoniously broke his nose last year, I guess.
Oh, that's right, he did.
Or unceremoniously, whatever it was. But no broken noses this year, no reported injuries, so good on everybody.
Much like the first pitch, it is ceremoniously breaking your nose if you only do it once a year at a softball game.
Yeah, yes, it's true. You get to walk right off the field after that. But yeah, nobody got hurt, which is the other thing you like. And they did raise some good money for charity. Reminder, the Packers are a publicly owned charitable organization. One of the other players has been getting some talk. I mean, obviously the good players have been playing well. Za'Darius Smith getting a lot of love out there for his ability out there on the field. Now, notice that Andy Herman was at camp, and he had some interesting things. Friend of the podcast, Andy Herman, mentioning that watching Rashawn Gary was, to him, like he remembered watching Clay Matthews on the field for the first time. When he started watching, you know, both wearing number 52, he said, watching them out there, he said it looked a lot like that. It's somebody who is freakishly athletically gifted and able to put it into practice. I don't know. Anything else you want to take away from that, Aaron? It's nice to see that from Andy.
Well, absolutely, because Andy was he did not like that pick the night of the draft. I remember that because I commented on that like 3 days later when he was like, all right, after I've gotten a chance to watch some film, blah, 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 I'm more and more okay with this pick. Like, he's gone 180 from draft night. Draft night, he thought he was going to turn in his Packer fan card and go work for Vikings wine line. It's good to hear that. I mean, it, like you said, it's OTAs. I mean, but it's good. Anytime you hear anything other than, well, that guy has not looked very good, that's the only time you should ever worry. Like, all right. Okay. Yeah. Or slower than advertised, or, you know,
yeah,
smaller.
That sort of stuff does happen, but it's nice to see he's sounding like he's moving around very well. The other player who's gotten some love this time, it's probably not a guy who's going to see the field a lot, but Raven Green has been getting a lot of look and a lot of play, basically doing, probably helped by the fact that he's playing essentially the spot that Josh Jones would be playing, having that kind of hybrid linebacker safety sort of thing where they can get him around the field, let him do more things, let him be up around the line of scrimmage a little bit more, covering guys in that slot and things like that. The things that Josh Jones was good at, and now Raven Green is out there doing those things while Josh Jones is trying to tell everybody he needs to be traded so he can make more money. He's busy getting replaced. I don't know. And I don't have any problem with Josh Jones holding out for this. He doesn't need to be there. It's an OTA.
Right. Absolutely. No, and that's the thing, too. It's like it's voluntary, but it's not voluntary. Well, then why call it voluntary?
It is voluntary.
Was voluntary and I wasn't trying to make the team, I wouldn't be there.
Yeah, and I have no problem with players saying things like that. I guess the only issue I have with the entire Josh Jones idea is somebody leaked it, and it was him this time, I think. I mean, generally, one of the two sides, if somebody's making some sort of stink or stuff like that, it gets leaked by one side or the other, and it looks like it was his camp leaking it this time. I don't understand the value of that. He doesn't have any particular leeway here. He's not going to be a free agent soon. He's entering his third year now, and he hasn't been on the field all that particularly much, and he's looked okay at it. It's not the sort of guy who can really force his way out. I mean, at that point, play out the stretch,
right,
and then check out what you've got in free agency. I guess I don't know that you have that much power. And when you push it like this, you see how much power you don't have in that the contract didn't help you, and you know, maybe it's something where the power structure there is not fair to the players, and maybe it should be changed.
Right.
But at the time, you're going through that.
That's for the next CBA, though. You play within the rules that have been given or have been set by yourselves. By the way, you guys negotiated for these, not necessarily, you know, Josh Jones, because he was in high school or barely in college where the last time the CBA was agreed on. But I mean, that's how it is. And yeah, no, and when the Packers go out to shop him and, you know, the Tennessee Titans or the Houston Texans are offering the Packers a 7th-round pick, you know, maybe a 6th-round pick tops for him.
Yeah.
I mean, the Packers can just put it right back in Josh Jones's and his agent's face. Like, we spent a second rounder on him?
Yeah. And
we spent a second round on you. You haven't given us a second round talent that we thought you would give us, and here's what we're going to get for you. Now you give us a reason why we should trade you instead of just let you ride the bench and then still get a seventh rounder for you in the offseason. I mean,
or the other thing is, I mean, the very Packer thing to do here is also, we'll keep you here, figure out your way onto the field or don't. That's up to you. If you want to show us that you belong on the field, get on the field and prove it to us, get on the practice field. Show you're better than Raven Green. Show that you belong on the field more than Savage or Amos, which it would be very hard to do, but he might find a spot in this very versatile type of defense or package, sub-package sorts of things. When you're not there, though, somebody's going to step up and replace you if you're not careful. And the thing is, he's got 2 years left in this contract. He doesn't have a whole lot of power to get out of that. And at the end of the day, if the Packers let him play through that contract and he goes somewhere else in free agency, the Packers can get a compensatory pick for him, maybe a sixth. You know, it's like if they get a sixth and a compensatory pick rather than a seventh for giving him away for nothing, then you do it. You know, it's like, okay.
Right, and then on top of it too, like by him not playing, he's not adding any value to himself. You know, once he does hit free agency, he's going to make veteran minimum.
Yeah. It's harder when you haven't actually, you've had the chance on the field. It's not like he hasn't been given a chance on the field. He's had his chances on the field. He hasn't put up the stuff that people were hoping to see from him. He's crazy athletic. He's a tall, fast, strong guy who can really tackle. He doesn't play, he's better the closer he is to the line of scrimmage, we'll say. He doesn't play as well if he's 12 yards off the ball and having to read an entire field. He's an instinctive player.
And it's not like he came out of college like a Vince Young or a Reggie Bush that had a big name and someone's going to take a swing at you in 5 years because your potential is just, nobody knows who he is outside of Green Bay and whatever college you went to.
NC State.
So anyways, all right, enough on that guy.
But of course, the most important thing that we need to talk about here in the Packers section is what quarterback chugs the beer the best? Yeah. And it's been shown and it's been ridiculous. Here's the thing that gets me the most is none of these are fair competitions. Have you watched? The biggest problem is that I guess Aaron Rodgers did this in Milwaukee. He was drinking a beer and he wasn't great at chugging. Whatever, who cares?
This is the original. This is what's like. The Packers are the ones that started this. Like that's the other thing. Like,
and Bakhtiari is the best. He's still the king.
Right.
But here's the other thing: is he's doing it in Milwaukee, where by the way the beers are bigger and they're cheaper. All right, so he is drinking a full man's beer. That is a full pint of beer, at least, that they are drinking at those games. And there's probably a chance that there's Light and Google somewhere involved there. Who knows? Right. I guess it's Milwaukee. It's probably still Miller and Liney's, but there's a better chance he's drinking a real beer. Everyone knows that what happened with Trubisky is he's drinking at whatever they call it. Is it Silcom still?
Sure.
Yeah, whatever they did when they tore down the beautiful Comiskey Park and put up that thing. He's drinking what is obviously Bud Light because they don't have good beer to offer there. There's no chance he's drinking a Goose Island.
No.
And so that's just drinking water. And he's drinking out of what appears to be a shot glass because it's smaller than his hand.
Yes.
He's not even drinking the same volume of beer that Aaron Rodgers is. And it can't be compared. But they're treating it like it's the same thing. And then Patrick Mahomes, watching the St. Louis Blues get their backsides handed to them the other night beautifully in a 7-2 loss, shows up, as they were pointing out, that clearly Missouri teams love losing to Boston franchises. But he's there, and he's the smartest one of all because what he did was clearly have a half to two-thirds already gone in a can, so you can't even see what's in it. But you can tell by the way he tilts his head. That can is two-thirds empty or half empty because he immediately gets it to beyond halfway tilt. Right. If it's full, you start low and are going up in a steady slope. He's all the way up, which means that beer is almost gone. Maybe completely gone. Who knows? But none of those should count. Stafford's got a real beer, but in a very thin glass. So none of it's fair because it's not even a singular competition with the same size glasses.
It's less beer in a thin glass. It's easier to drink fast out of, I know.
And the funniest thing to say was somebody saying something else Trubisky is better at Rodgers at or something.
Oh, that was NBC Sports Chicago.
And then everyone was just like, name the first thing.
Oh, yeah.
Name what the was the other thing he does?
He throws interceptions better, that's for sure.
That's true. And loses to NFC teams, I guess.
And loses to backup quarterbacks. No, it's ridiculous. First of all, the notion, okay, this comes from somebody who can chug a beer faster. I could probably outdrink Bakhtiari, and that's not even a lie. I I could. You've seen me chug beers. Lots of people who are listening to this podcast see me chug beers. I used to race people and pay our rent at parties. Anyways, I have never lost a beer chugging contest once in my life. It's not that great. So that's fine. All right. And I'm not even the ones who are like, oh, look at this promoting binge drinking. I don't even care. Yeah. So what? Whatever. I'm sick of this. My quarterback's better than your quarterback because he can chug a beer. Who gives a – I'll stop there. Because it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. It means nothing to the game of football. It means nothing about on the field. It means nothing about leadership abilities. As you stated out by volumes and quantities, yeah, that's even great. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And the thing is, these people wouldn't even be doing it. Had it been Rosen out in Miami or – what's his name for the Jets?
Darnold.
What's his name? Darnold. Or what's his name for the Raiders?
Derek Carr.
Nobody would do it, but it was Aaron Rodgers during a playoff basketball game on national television.
I just love that this entire segment is based on quarterbacks whose names you can't recall.
I know who they are.
Who is that?
Yeah.
He's like 6'3" or something.
You know what I'm trying to say, though. Like people, like they're not as famous, right? I know that Derek Carr is a quarterback out in Oakland. I know, who else did I say? Rosen in Miami, Darnold in New York. Yeah. I know that. I'm just trying to. It's like
I know, but you're doing it on the fly.
Nobody's going to pay attention to them if they do it. Whoop de doo. It's like, oh, they're promoting binge drinking, but instead, because it's Aaron Rodgers and everyone wants to take shots at Aaron Rodgers, especially everyone in the NFC North, because they know that their quarterbacks are inferior. They're trying to put a spin on it as, oh, look, our quarterback's better than their quarterback because he can drink beer faster.
Yeah.
I actually have more respect for Kirk Cousins right now than I ever have in my entire life because of this whole thing.
Wow. Oof. Yeah.
How about that?
Here's the one thing that was put up is that if you look at the first 2 years as a starter, Aaron Rodgers threw for 8,472 yards compared to the 5,416 Trubisky's thrown, 58 touchdowns to 31. 20 interceptions to 19, 64% compared to 63%. And then if you look at just the last 2 years, over 6,000 yards passing, 41 touchdowns, 8 interceptions for Rodgers. By the way, they're the exact same numbers for Trubisky because he's only played 2 years. And after this next year, the Bears are going to have to pay him, except for they won't because they don't have any room because they spent all their money paying a quarterback who's on their defense.
Right. And that was the biggest reason why the Packers didn't get him.
Which is exactly the sort of cap hell that the Vikings are dealing with now, where they're going to have to restructure Rudolph's contract in order to even pay the rookies who they just drafted because they didn't have cap space for their rookies after they drafted them to actually pay all the people they just drafted on their team contracts.
And they cut somebody else too, didn't they?
Yeah, and they were talking about restructuring some other guys on the line, but yeah,
they're literally asking their players to take pay cuts, and that's only sustainable for so long, especially when you keep paying people to bring them in more than the people who are already on the team.
Yeah, so it's fun. The Bears have become a very loud team for having won zero playoff games in like the last 7 years, but you know, whatever. They really should probably still be, you know, up there as probably the favorite team in the NFC North at this point. I mean, they've got a great defense, and they've got a good offense. They've got Allen Robinson out there. They've got some other good receivers and some good running backs. They did lose Jordan Howard, who's going to be in that mess of an Eagles backfield again. But you know, they've still got good players back there. They should still be a team to contend with. Packers are going to be better this year and could push them. They're actually, I think Vegas has them as the favorite to win, but we'll see. We'll see on all that. We'll leave that for our Packers talk for now. The only other thing going on right now, since there's no Bucks game this week, there was no Badger football, there's no Badger basketball, no Badger hockey, there was nothing else other than the Brewers. And the Brewers, they had a decent week. So, I mean, when we left off, they'd beaten the Twins in that wild game where they came back. Arcia gets the home run, gives them the lead, they win the 5-4 game. At Target Field. They lost the very next game, but then they came back and they had a series, a four-game series. They had a day off too, which is nice finally for this team. Four-game series with Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh at PNC. And they took 3 out of 4, and they looked decent. They got an 11-5 win. where Chase Anderson gave him five innings. Corbin Burnes just made everybody on Twitter just light on fire. Just Twitter caught fire because Corbin Burnes pitched two-thirds of an inning, gave up three hits and three earned runs and one walk. Yeah, so his ERA is up to 9.92. And he's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes he comes out, he'll get you a hold. And sometimes he comes out and gives up three runs, but you know, it doesn't matter as much when you're up 11-5. You just need people to eat innings there. Jeffress got him two innings on a two-inning hold. Gave up one hit in two innings. Hader came in, gave him one-third of an inning to save Burnes. And then Fat Matt Albers came out and finished it off in a non-save situation. Yeah, Anderson only, he had 94 pitches. And so not deep into this, but he gave him five good innings. Kept him in it. I mean, when he left, he only gave up the two runs. They were up 5-2 when he walked out of the field. They were up 7-2 when Burnes gave up the three runs, but you know, then they got a 9-run fourth. So great game there, at least to get that series started. After that, then they did lose a game 4-9. That one was you're going to lose some every now and then. So that one, they actually started off with Chacín. And now Chacín is going to be going down to the IL. Chacín only gave him 2 2/3 innings, 7 earned runs. Just started getting lit up right away. Freddy Peralta came in to pitch the next 3 1/3, and Claudio finished it off. So that's three pitchers, by the way, who are all over 5 in their ERAs. So that definitely did not help. But they'd had two big wins after that. They had the crazy 13-inning game because, of course, we can't go a week without a 13-inning game in Milwaukee.
No, they can't. This team is the most ridiculous extra innings team in the history of all time. They're stupid.
I don't even know how. They do it in several different ways. This one, seriously, you scored 10 runs in 9 innings. You should just win walking away.
Right.
But instead, they needed to score 10 runs because they needed a 2-run home run from Hiura. They say it very quickly on TV. It's always Hira.
Hira.
Yeah. And Hira doesn't get that 2-run home run. They're going to lose that game 10-8. But he gets them the 2-run home run in the ninth, top of the ninth. And then they go 4 more innings before Arcia hits his second home run of the night. He's at 7 home runs now.
No, I know.
He's batting, 264, I think. 264, 265, somewhere in there. He's having a heck of a season after a very slow start. Imagine if he'd started off hitting well. He could be batting 275 at this point. Yeah, he's batting 264, I think. Two home runs to put him to 7. He's hitting very well at this point.
I actually have to thank Arcia. He's half the reason why I've been getting all the Twitter followers lately here. I actually made a post on Twitter about I was trying to say, I said what I ended up typing was Arcia is a better shortstop than Baez, basically. What I meant to say was Arcia is playing better than Baez is right now. Like, it just, like, I didn't type it right. Like, I just typed it, like, not thinking. Arcia is better than Baez. Like, just, and it came out as in general, which that's a stretch. But Baez is having a little bit of a rough spell right now. Obviously, he strikes out every time he goes to the plate versus Arcia, who's playing, like, $1 million right now. Well, I'm looking down at my feed right now, and I'm still getting reply tweets to that one. Ooh. And that was what night did they win? That was Thursday. No, Saturday night that they won. So 2 days later, people are still hammering back at me about that one. It's like, as of right now, he is. Yeah, I mean, because Baez looks like total garbage right now. And Arcia's playing like we've wanted him to play for years. And he's starting to hit well. And he's still a really good fielding shortstop, too. So.
He is. He's great. The game Sunday, the Brewers get the 4-2 win to make sure that they don't split. They get the 3-1 series win in Pittsburgh. Eric Thames carrying the team through this one. He gets a run-scoring double and the 2-run home run. He's 3 of the RBIs in this. He's got 3 of them, all 2-out RBIs as well. Or RBI, as whether it's an RBI or if they are RBIs or RBI. But I think they're
RSBI.
RSBI, yeah. RSBI. I don't know. I say RBI generally. I guess I did say RBIs this time, so I guess I don't know. I prefer RBI.
RSBI sounds like something from Blurn's Ball, but
I assume the R is just incorporated into the acronym itself. But
yes.
Who knows? Perez played. This is actually the best part about this win is I mean, the lineup is Gamma leading off, followed by Yelich and Braun, then Hura, Thames, Perez, Arcia, Pina, and Davies. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that Pina and Thames and Perez and Gamel are in that game and you win, that's a big one, because that's a game where you're like, we don't care. We're getting a bunch of guys a day off, getting a mm-hmm. bunch of guys rest. Davies goes 8 innings and gave up 2 runs over 8. He had 8 hits and 1 walk. Only 3 strikeouts, but I mean, he didn't pitch crazy number of pitches here. It's only 107 pitches through 8 innings. Just saving that bullpen, it's great. Burns comes out and gets the save, too. He gets he comes out in the 9th. Claudio pitched 1 batter. And then Burns came out and got the last 2 outs and finished off the game with the save. So, you know, It's nice to have him have that after having the 3-run game just 2 days earlier, and then, you know, or 3 days earlier, and have this to at least get him out there.
Getting that flyaway game like that in that fashion with the backups and with Davies being able to burn up a whole bunch of innings and let the bullpen get a rest too, that's fantastic. So, and just on a positive note, I don't have the stats in front of me because fairness and I don't give a rip about facts and we don't use facts. I haven't looked up the series record between the Pirates and the Brewers over the last 5 years, but I feel like the Pirates have got to be winning the series over the 5-year series. It seems like because when I used to live up north, getting down to Brewers games was tough, you know, that was a weekend trip for me, but I think maybe 4 out of the last 8 Brewers games I've been to have been against the Pirates, and they always lose to the Pirates. You know, there was that they lost 5 straight games to the Pirates just before or after the All-Star break last year, right? Where they had to have a makeup game that they did a doubleheader during a 4-game sweep or a 4-game series, and they lost 5 of them, all 5.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember how they finished. I thought they had a better record against Pittsburgh than, you know, by the end of the year they had a winning record.
Because it just seems like they're always losing to Pittsburgh.
It's always a tough set. It's a group of fairly similar kind of fan bases where we're like, we know we have to cycle up to winning, and mm-hmm. then we cycle back down, and then we have to cycle back up to winning. Right now, they're not in that winning cycle. They're working back up to their winning cycle again, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where we have to make hay at this point while this sun is shining. The other big Brewers news is, I mean, we mentioned Hura's, you know, great role here. He's batting, I believe, .281. His OPS is somewhere around 900, I think, like 850, 900, somewhere in there. And they're sending him back down to AAA San Antonio, which is the new AAA. They used to have, Colorado State, but Colorado Springs, I mean.
It was Nashville before that, too. That's where...
Yeah, Nashville was a good one. They got tricked out of Nashville. Basically, somebody came in and stole Nashville from them right before the season started, and they had to move all their players quickly out to Colorado Springs, which everybody hates because it's a terrible area. Apparently, it's a terrible setup there, and the facilities mm-hmm. aren't good. And so they quickly, as soon as they had time to plan their way out, they got into San Antonio. They're sending Hura back down to AAA San Antonio. Shaw's coming back off the injured list. And this is making people furious. Like, Brewers Twitter right now is just going crazy over this. Local talk radio is going crazy over this. I think Heller was basically like, okay. Like, he understood it. He didn't like it, but he understood it, I believe.
Yeah. That's kind of where all the good fans are. Like, you know, even on Twitter, like, some of the better followers are, you know, some of the better followers are just like, you know, I get it. Like, I understand why they're doing this. I don't like it, but I get it. You know, it's one of those situations.
Somebody up there was saying something like, this is the most Brewers thing ever to do. I was like, it's really not. This is just the state of modern baseball. The way the contracts are worked out after you're drafted, the way that this all plays out, and the way arbitration works out, and the way this, I mean, like, you have to play this long, if you're called up before this date, if you have this many days of credit. I mean, they're just trying to play the numbers because you want to be able to have people under your control as long as possible. And if that's the way and it's not fair the way baseball contracts are set up. You play forever in a minor league system, and sometimes they mm-hmm. keep you there specifically to make sure that they can have you longer on the back end of the contract. And it's not fair. But that's the rules they're playing in. And if the rules are set up this way, then your GM is almost obligated to do these things, to do this. I mean, in the legal profession, there are some things that it's like, well, I don't like doing this, but if I don't do it, I'm going to get in trouble ethically with my group for not having done everything. You know, it's like, I don't like filing this motion. If I don't file this motion, though, I'm not doing everything I can for my client, so I have to do this because it's the best thing for my client. This is the best thing long term. Stearns, sober or drunk David Stearns, has to be concerned with not just the here and the now, but with maintaining that he has a job 10 years from now because the Brewers continue to win. He wants to win in the long term. The Astros do this exactly. The Cubs do this thing exactly. I mean, when you have Theo Epstein or you have the makeup that they have down in Houston, they do these things all the time. So, it stinks right now because you've been so excited about Hira, and people are very angry about bringing him up to have Shaw come back in and play, who hasn't been hitting well, but he's going to hit out of it. He didn't forget how to play baseball.
We need Shaw to get out of it. That's the other thing, too, is that this team needs Shaw. Shaw is one of the faces of the franchise. You can't just discard him. I mean, he is the mayor of Ding Dong City.
And he's on the team for years yet, too.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of the cornerstones of this current lineup. You know, like, he was here before a lot of the other players were, you know, so it's... Yeah, you need him to get it turned around. You really do. And so, to your point, though, I don't think Drunk Stearns was real happy about that move.
just
saying. He started referring to Sober Stearns to really differentiate
himself. Yes, that's true. Yes, he did. But, I mean, like, for Shaw, this is the period of time where you can get healthy very quickly here. They have today off. They have the travel day. They're coming back to Miller Park. They're going to play Miami, who is among the three worst teams in baseball, right? Like, there's Miami, there is Baltimore, and there is Kansas City right now. And those are the three worst teams in baseball records-wide. They're clearly the worst in the National League. So you get to play Miami for three games and another three against Pittsburgh. And then you get another day off. So in the next 8 days, they will play three games against a terrible team and three games against a not-so-good team and have 2 days off. And then they're going to go down to Houston. But still, this is a stretch where you should start seeing better pitches. You should start being able to do something here. And if we're looking long run, I don't have a problem with Hira, you know, coming back up like a month from now. Like, get him to the All-Star break, whatever it is it takes. I don't know the math on exactly when it is most advantageous contract-wise to bring him up. I don't know that stuff. But I don't care. The Brewers are in first place. Mm-hmm. They're in first place, alone in first place, and they've got a fairly good stretch here getting towards the All-Star break, where the Cubs are going to have a harder stretch than we are, and we're going to have some easier games coming up all the way to the All-Star break. So,
What was that? And speaking of, if you want to know, this wasn't the most Brewers thing ever. This is the most Twins thing ever, by the way. Although Lavelle O'Neill would point out that all other teams do it too. It's just that since the Twins are such a cheapskate team that it seems to stand out a little bit more. And that was a big thing about when the Packers, I'm from Wisconsin, when the Brewers were playing the Twins, was that they were showing the hardest record in baseball versus the worst record in baseball, or who had played against the toughest records in baseball overall and who'd played against the worst records. And the Brewers had the toughest record up to that point, and the Twins had the worst, and it wasn't close.
Well, yeah, the AL Central has been terrible. The last couple of years.
And you just said it, too. So the Pirates are in a rebuilding phase right now. Heck, they're only five games back of the Brewers, and they're only two games below 500. The NL Central is insane.
Yeah, it's really good. The NL Central is a good group. Like you said, the AL Central has been playing a hard time. I mean, it doesn't mean the Twins aren't good. I like seeing the Twins win, and the I-94 corridor game for the World Series is my hope. But still, we'll see. They're still growing a team in Minnesota. The other good news in terms of people, we talked about somebody going down to AAA, somebody coming up from AAA. Jimmy Nelson, zombie Jimmy Nelson, back from the dead, coming back to pitch Miller Park this Wednesday against Miami, which is like a little bit pitching against a AAA plus team. Mm-hmm. I love looking back when they're like, man, could you imagine a team that had Giancarlo Stanton, TJ or JT Realmuto, and Christian Yelich on it? That team would be incredible. And of course they weren't, and all those players are elsewhere now, but yeah. Jimmy Nelson coming back, Yoli Chacin going down to the IL. And hopefully he can get well. He has not looked good this year. Something's wrong. I don't know if there's a hitch in there somewhere or if it's been hurting a while. Either way, he's going to go spend some time getting healthy again. Jimmy Nelson coming back, so it should be fun to at least see him. I'm sure he's going to get a rousing ovation when he goes onto the field for the first time. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. Can't wait to have him back.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have Jimmy Nelson back. So welcome back, Jimmy Nelson. We're very excited to have you. It's wonderful to have him on the team again. One other thing before I guess we close out the main event. I mean, Aaron's brought up a whole bunch of fairness and whatever acts. You know, the fairness today, the fairness and I don't care about facts act. I want to point out that the fairness and I don't care about facts act, I mean, it's passed both houses of Congress. It has not yet been signed into law yet. Okay. So, I mean, I don't think it's a requirement, but clearly, Aaron, over the last 2 weeks, I think we had a fairness in what I listen to act, the fairness in... What was it? There were some other good ones last week.
Oh my God. I was railing them out last week. I don't know what was getting into me, but yes. Yeah. No.
I love that. But we'll go on this. We're, like we said, we're in a tough sports spot. Even like the college sports are pretty much done at this point. So the only couple of things we're going to mention, a few little things here, but we're going to roll all of this together in our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
Okay, Aaron, one thing I did want to bring up in terms of Wisconsin sports, there was a very interesting local central Wisconsin story. It's a statewide story, I guess, but I believe it's pronounced Roisin. It's R-O-I-S-I-N. Roisin Willis ran a 2-minute, 5.68-second, 800-meter race this last week at the state championship in lacrosse.
2 minutes, what was the seconds?
2 minutes, 5.68 seconds. That is the new state record for girls 800 meter. It is also the fastest time that has been run in the nation this year in high school. Run by a Stevens Point area senior high freshman. She is 14 years old and ran a 2:05.
I think the fastest I ran, I was an 800 runner, and I cracked 2 minutes once. And that was cooking. I mean, I was fast back then, but that is,
yeah, back when we
the
were
girls
good.
The girls were, because sometimes in some of this, because I'm from a really small school, but they'd run guys and girls concurrently to save time. And I mean, the girls, the fastest girls were like 2:30s and stuff like that. Boy, that is moving. Good job. Holy smokes.
Second place, this is D1 state, second place was 2 minutes 13 seconds. 13.43, nearly 8 seconds difference between first place and second place. 2:13 is cooking too, but
no, 2:13 is fast.
But Willis set the state record and had the fastest time in the nation this year. She's 14. It's crazy. And I'll tell you, I watched Selinsky back when he set the state record for the 2 mile. That was, and I think he may have set the 1 mile too. He went on to Oregon and the Olympics as well. And he ran for Spash as well. A very long tradition of cross country runners out of Spash area. And,
absolutely, yeah. No, they were ridiculous. When I was coaching up at Rhinelander, you go to sectionals and they'd get first, second, fourth, fifth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Yeah. You know, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I watched the state final because I was at ROTC at lacrosse at the time, and the ROTC cadets help run the meet. They do stuff for the event because they're right there and they volunteer because they're told to, because they're voluntold. Mm-hmm. So I was working that and I watched Selinsky run it. It was a ridiculous. He more than lapped several people on the 2 mile. I believe he lapped one person on the mile.
That's really hard. That's really hard.
He's crazy. There was a kid
that's
in my
only
high school.
Four laps, man.
I know. There was a kid in my high school, Dave Shuseski, and he. Yeah. At the state meet, set the records at that time for whatever our division was. He set the records for, no, it was the conference meet. I'm sorry. Conference meet. He set the records for the mile and the 2 mile. In between those two, he ran from the track, which is at Central, Lacrosse Central, ran all the way up the bluff, Granddad's Bluff, and back in between as just a separate workout between the 1 mile and the 2 mile. What? Yeah,
that's insane.
Distance runners are crazy people, and you know this more than anybody here.
Right, I ran the 8 and the 4x8, and then I would run the mile. But the problem is the spacing on those races was a killer, because the 800 was, I think, like two races before the mile, so that was kind of hard to do in there. And the 800 is a modified sprint, I mean, it's not a distance, but it's not a sprint. It's somewhere in between. It's the hardest, because right at about a minute 30, a minute 40, that's where your body switches from aerobic to anaerobic to aerobic.
Anaerobic, where you're burning, instead of burning oxygen, you are basically turning stuff into, you're just burning something else, ineffectively burning oxygen and sugars.
And that's what makes it rough, because you can't really sprint, you know. And like, I never make it past high school, obviously. But it's a tough race. But some of those crazy. There was a kid from Antigo when I was coaching up at Rhinelander. I can't think of his name. He was like that too. He was down to the 15s for the 5K in the upper 15s. Then at track meets, he'd win the 2 mile and the 1 mile, and he'd run the whole time when he wasn't, you know, in races, just to make sure his legs stayed warm.
Yeah, this is crazy. The only big Wisconsin news that I have is that the rowing national championships for this week, Wisconsin placed 15th. The only thing I'll say, though, is that Navy placed 17th. So Wisconsin's better on the water than Navy. And I think that's impressive. So they should be happy about
that. That needs to be addressed at Pentagon level. The Navy should be winning the rowing event every single year. Sorry.
Washington won the championship this year. But the other one thing I do want to mention, it's not really Wisconsin sport, but it's the last call thing that I wanted to talk about, is Texas just today was tweeting out their excitement that the Texas football program had a combined GPA of 2.89, the highest they have ever had in the history of that program. This is a school which last year ranked 57th in academic progress rate, 52nd. Wisconsin was 8th, and that's just among football programs. They, by the way, also finished behind North Texas in terms of academic progress rate. The idea that you went on to brag about the fact that you combined for a 2.89, and not only that, which is okay, but to say, like, by the way, we've never been this good before. Generally, we don't learn how to read or write that much out here. So it's like, geez. And they're catching a lot of flack on Twitter. They're like, you need to fire whoever put this up without thinking, so that everybody can see how dumb you are. It's like, you aren't even winning. Like, Texas isn't even a good football program right now. They should have smarter kids.
I'm going to have to redact some words from this, but Lewis Black had a bit about that with Bill Clinton, about how he was blown away that when Bill Clinton was running for president, one of his brags was, during my time as governor of Arkansas, I took us from 50th in education to number 49.
Yeah.
That's... Well, really, Bill, what was your secret? Hey, kids, we've got pencils.
Yeah, that's right. Come to school, we got pencils. That's a good one, yeah. Aaron, what else have you got to add for this week, then?
The punchline of that joke, I can't say it on this program.
No, a lot of Lewis Black cannot be repeated on this program.
Yeah, on the stinky, farty, smelly. Anyways, the only thing I had for also not a Wisconsin thing, but a national thing is, but being bigger guys, we have to appreciate Andy Ruiz Jr. Winning the heavyweight championship the other night. And in impressive fashion as well. He didn't get a lucky butterbean shot and catch somebody in the temple and knock him out. No, he worked over Anthony Joshua, and it's like they were talking about on Drew and KB on the way home. Basically, you know, and Anthony Joshua looks like an Adonis god, right?
Yeah.
And just exactly what you'd picture as a heavyweight boxer, and Ruiz looks like. Ruiz has got a gut, let's put it that way. And there's actually a picture of Ruiz after he knocked down Anthony Joshua, and his body is in the same pose as that famous picture of Muhammad Ali over top of George Foreman. It's like exactly the same look and everything.
Tell
like,
him get
not,
up.
Yeah. Not staged, obviously, because Ruiz was fighting, you know, but and the way Joshua's laying on the ground looks like Foreman or Frazier. Sorry, that was Frazier. Frazier. And Ruiz has got that same snarl and the same gloves and the same, except Ruiz has a gut hanging halfway to his knees.
I think Stephen A. Smith actually called him Butterbean on Twitter today.
Oh my God. It's great. It's great. And the way he won, it wasn't flukish.
He went right at him.
He beat him up. He beat him up, and he had some. He got knocked down early, but he got back up. And a lot of people compare it to when Homer Simpson had a boxing career about 20 years ago on The Simpsons, which also leads to the point that yes, The Simpsons have already done everything, so don't bother being creative.
They have. Yes, that's true. You get to be on TV that long, producing something every week. You kind of run out of everything.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that, I think, wraps it up for this week. Thank you for joining us on what was a little bit of an abbreviated thing, but we've definitely enjoyed doing this. We'll come back with more Brewers Talk next week. We'll see if there's anything interesting else for the Packers or anybody else as we go forward. I'm hoping my Bruins pull out a win before we talk again. And remember, between now and then, you can follow me at jbarn54. You can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can go check us out at ScottyJohnny.com. Find all of our posts there. You can also go to our Facebook page for Scotty Johnny Podcast. So if any of those things, also wherever you listen to us, whether it's on Stitcher or Spotify or iTunes or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is, go download it, listen, rate us, review us, and share us with your friends and family or people you hate who you have their email addresses for. Either way, I don't care, but give us those ratings. And also remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
It's the fairness in ending the podcast early act.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1.